morning. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the MLB Strategy Show presented by Prize Picks. I'm Eric Lindquist. We're going to talk through this 12-game MLB slate that we have. We have some weather. We have some things that are going to be happening here and there. But the thing that's mainly going to be happening is Greg Ehrenberg breaking down baseball content for you. Looking forward to this one. Go follow him at GEhrenbergDFS over on the Twitters. How you doing, my dude?
I am good, like you said, right away. So I'm just going to let people know this off the top. Coors Field is usually an important talking point on these slates. I am not going to include this in my player pool. Writing it off already, I don't think that game is going to play. Okay. What is the weather like by you right now?
Cloudy.
Okay, because so it has gone from being moderate in the Northeast, New Jersey, New York area. It's been like in the high 60s, low 70s most of the week. It's supposed to be 96, 98 degrees this weekend out of nowhere. So in terms of what, there's going to be weird weather going on.
Yeah, I think it's like 72. So it's really benign out here right now. We had a really hot week like a week and a half ago. And since then, yeah, 77 it looks like is... hang on, what is the high for today? I can't even see it. It's going to be 65 at first pitch of the Angels game. If anybody cares about those such things, you probably care about that more, but man, 90s, that happened fast.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point being though, also, but I know the Mets are involved in this game, although the game isn't in New York, it's in Colorado, but yeah, Colorado is gone from, it was like 90 degrees yesterday and it's supposed to snow today. And that game is almost no chance of playing. So I feel good taking that out of my player pool. Just going to lead that with people right off the bat when they're coming in. And, you know, as they're liking and subscribing to the video, they know the Mets game in Colorado, Coors Field, probably not happening.
I'll reemphasize that. Like the video, subscribe here. Just like, so you can be like Sean V in the chat, hanging out. Appreciate you. Good to see you, my friend. Rob Martin, Michael Roundtree. We're playing the hits this morning, boys. We are playing the hits and girls, of course. Love you. Love you all. Let's get to it, shall we? We got a lot to get to. I want to get right to it for you.
For sure. Let's jump right in.
Tampa Bay, 4.8 implied runs going up against the Baltimore Orioles. The more friendly confines of Camden Yards, depending on the game, depending on the power situation. As you said, warmer out there in the Northeast, so that's cool. Ryan Yarbrough on the mound, he's not really missing bats. Tyler Wells on the other side, he's not missing bats. Very high implied total for both of these teams. 9 total runs for this game. Do you have any interest in pitchers whatsoever here?
No interest in the pitchers. Ryan Yarbrough has been good in the past, but there's always some struggles in terms of how deep is he going to be allowed to work into games, or also the lack of strikeout upside this year. So easy enough to write him off. And then Tyler Wells, I'm almost positive I've never rostered him ever at any point on any slate, and I'm not going to start here. And also the point about the weather, we've seen a lot of lower scoring games. We've seen some higher scoring games as of late, and I think that's a trend that's going to start to continue as the weather starts to heat up. So Camden Yards has played very, very favorable towards pitchers so far this year. I think we're going to start to see it lean a little bit back towards the offense as now that the weather's heating up.
Yep, I'm so there with you. Again, I reached out to something on a text thread where they were trying to do weather adjustments and how, oh, this is going to be the weakest the ball's been forever. I'm like, we'll wait. We'll wait for some weather to come through. It's May 20th now. 2 weeks ago, it was cold everywhere there. Now it's 90 degrees, 86 at first pitch in Baltimore, wind blowing out. Makes sense why you're seeing a 9 implied total. Still, you see a ball like Aaron Judge hits where it would have been a homer in 29 of 30 ballparks and it wasn't in Camden. It can get frustrating from time to time, but with these two pitchers on the mound who don't miss bats, who aren't very good by any intents and purposes, I am just fine getting to stacks here in this spot. 4.8 implied runs for Tampa Bay. I think that that's obviously the more appealing spot to go to. There's positive leverage to be had. They're always stacking up batters against the handedness of the pitcher. So Tampa Bay, I think, definitely gets a lot of appreciation for me on this slate. How do they stack up for you?
Yeah, so I don't really think there's a need to look at Baltimore for starters, just because, you know, Ryan Yarbrough, while I say I don't have much interest in him as a starting pitcher because the lack of strikeout upside and sometimes doesn't work deep into games, he's still quality enough where on a 12-game slate, assuming to be actually 11 after that Mets game gets canceled, I don't really feel the Baltimore Orioles as a team that I want to get behind. The Tampa Bay Rays are different, though. Like you mentioned, one of the higher implied run totals on the slate, 4.8 runs. And Tyler Wells, his numbers aren't terrible this year. But if you look at some of the projections that I like to lean on, Zips has him projected for a 4.85 ERA the rest of the season. Steamer has him at a 4.62 ERA. And then also you just look at Tyler Wells in terms of being a guy, not the best stuff, is transitioning from a reliever to a starter. And that's something that I think could be an issue for him as he moves forward. We haven't seen him work all that deep into games. Seven starts, has only pitched a total of 28 innings. So as he gets stretched out more and more, I do think we're going to start seeing him get less effective. So the Rays, maybe not the highest priority stack of the day, but I do think they're a team to have in the mix on a larger slate. We do them with a 6.1% chance to be a top stack compared to a 4% ownership share. So 6.1 doesn't seem that significant, but on a slate of this size, that is the fourth highest top stack odds, and they are represented as a little underowned.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Wander Franco. You've got, of course, a number of guys that up and down this lineup that just make a lot of sense to get to against Wells. I'm going to have a fair number of stacks. Again, it's 12 games/11 if you want to just take Coors Field off the board here right off the get-go. And then we can move ourselves to other places. But Tampa Bay makes a lot of sense here. Baltimore, shout out Cedric Mullins if you want to go that direction. If you want to take some shots there, I don't completely hate it. But it's Ryan Yarbrough who's going to be the long reliever, left on left crime, whatever. Cedric Mullins still. I feel better about guys pulling the ball in that ballpark than trying to hit it out to left field at the moment. Anything else from this game for you?
Nope. We get it on the next one.
Cool. Let's keep it going. We've got the Dodgers. We got the Phillies. Dodgers heading out east. Julio Urias and Ranger Suarez, two pitchers in days of yore that were missing bats that had opportunities to be really, really good. I don't feel very good about either of them today whatsoever. Urias never really works long enough. Plus the K percentage now sub 20%. Same thing to be said about Suarez right from the get-go. Any interest in pitchers here?
No, and I understand Urias just got lit up by the Phillies in his last start, so I think that might make a lot of people kind of want to gravitate potentially towards the Philly offense due to recency bias. But in general, here's how I've been approaching Urias this year. I don't want to roster him. I don't want to stack against him. 17.7% K rate, that doesn't really indicate a lot of upside. Like you said, he's not pitching deep into games. There's been games where he's pitched six innings and has been at like 70-ish pitches, and they've still taken him out. They just don't like to really stretch out his innings. The Dodgers, they go to their bullpen. So I think the upside in him is pretty limited, not getting innings, not getting a lot of strikeouts, but he's a 3.12 expected ERA. The previous start against the Phillies aside, he's generally a pitcher that doesn't give up a whole lot of runs. The Dodgers have a good bullpen behind him. So I think this is a good spot for Philly with a sub 4 implied run total. Where things get interesting though, is with the Dodgers offense, because Ranger Suarez is just not the same guy he was last year, where he kind of came out of nowhere to dominate, finished the year with a 1.36 ERA, a 2.6 expected ERA. I know the Baseball Reference has a really wonky wins above replacement stat. I don't really like to use it. But with that said, they Ranger Suarez as like a top five pitcher in all of baseball or something along those lines last year. He is not that guy this year. The strikeouts are not the same. The walks are up. He's also going to get a lot more hard contact. The ground ball rate has gone from 59% last year to 48% this year. The home runs are also up. So we're looking at more balls getting hit in the air and more of the balls getting hit in the air leaving the park, because 5.8% home run to fly ball rate last year, 13.2% this year. So he's a 4.48 expected ERA, probably what we could expect from Ranger Suarez going forward, a guy with a mid-4s ERA, and he's going up against the Dodgers offense that's really good and is not picking up ownership, mostly because of cost. They're really expensive. That's almost always going to be the case with the Dodgers, but if they're going to be 3% owned against a pitcher that I think could potentially get hit hard in Ranger Suarez, and this is a hitter-friendly park, I'm going to be stacking the Dodgers today.
I'm with you. Ranger Suarez, looking through everything, he gave up 7 barrel balls all of last season. He's given up 10 already this season. Very drastic difference we're looking at for Ranger Suarez. The Dodgers up against left-handed pitching haven't been as substantially good as you would think. 101 WRC plus, 686 OPS, 146 ISO. It's kind of what that results in. And I think they're going to just see positive regression and keep getting better and better throughout this season. That's just, you're seeing Turner start to hit better. You're starting to see everybody from this offense top to bottom. Mookie Betts starting to come alive a little bit too after a sluggish start to the season. So Dodgers, no doubt about it. One of the best offenses in baseball, top three for me. And I will have lots of them today. Positive leverage to be at the moment. Sure, they're expensive, but any specific shout out for a Dodger batter you want?
I would just say don't be too afraid of the left on left matchups. Mm-hmm. I know that's something that you've mentioned a lot, particularly some Anthony Rizzo, with some Anthony Rizzo games as well. I can't remember what the matchups are. I think one was like Bruce Zimmerman against the Orioles, and then there was another left on left where he said you didn't mind getting to him anyway. So Ranger Suarez has been much better against lefties than righties this year. But if I think that he's going to get hit relatively hard by the Dodgers, he's probably gonna be out of the game early, which, I mean, if Ranger Suarez goes 6 or 7 innings, who cares? There's a good chance the stack is dead anyway. I think we're going to see the Dodgers get into the Phillies bullpen relatively early And I still don't mind guys like Freddie Freeman at reduced ownership. And I mean, this is going to be a fairly right-hand dominant Dodgers lineup either way, but I still don't mind getting to Freddie Freeman. He could hit anybody.
And on the other side of it, looks like Bryce Harper, he's been sitting out four straight games. We'll see if it's a fifth today. Obviously would be left on left on Urias, but I feel like going to Castellanos, those guys, it's not really necessary on this slate. If you wanted to have fun, but you said it before, it's not a pitcher that as many problems as he's had missing bats and isn't really fantasy viable. Urias is limiting that hard contact in a substantial way.
Yeah, it's not a team I'm looking to stack. If this was a smaller slate and Urias was popular and we were getting leverage, sure. But that's just not going to be the case. Urias isn't particularly popular. The Phillies offense, I don't really think it's the best spot for them. So other spots I'll be looking to stack.
All right, we're in a rhythm. Let's keep it rocking. Chicago White Sox, 3.4 implied runs against the Yankees. 5.1 for them here. Dallas Keuchel, Nestor Cortez. Both guys threw up from the same side, and that's about the only thing they have in common. Dallas Keuchel, 12.5% K percentage, 0.0% chance I roster him today against the Yankees. But Nestor Cortez is kind of the more interesting talking point. I think you and I both expected some regression eventually from the K percentage, and it's just stayed. He's been very, very good for the most part, pretty flat in terms of limiting hard contact. He's around that 40% barrier that I always think about being average, but a 322 expected slugging, 192 expected batting average. And of course, the important part, 32.5% K percentage. It's a very potent White Sox offense. I could see going both sides of this one. How do you value Cortez today?
Well, I can reasonably stack against him at this point because it's not just that the strikeout rate is good this year. He was good last year also from just a run prevention standpoint. He had a 2.9 ERA, 3.3 expected ERA. This year, he's at a 1.35 ERA, a 2.19 expected ERA. I think we could talk about whether it's worthwhile to get to the 10-6 price tag. I believe that's what he has on most expensive pitcher on the DraftKings slate at 10,600. On FanDuel, he's the second most expensive pitcher at 10,200. I think we could go back and forth about whether that's too expensive for Nestor Cortez or not, but I don't want to stack against him. I just think he's legitimately good. And maybe the strikeout rate regressed a little bit going forward, but he's just kind of the left-hand version now of the peak Johnny Cueto, a guy who's just able to change deliveries, is able to mess up the rhythms of hitters. He's going to do it. Like, he's not going to overwhelm you with stuff. He barely throws over 90 miles per hour. Actually, his average fastball velocity for his career is exactly 90 miles per hour on the dot. But he's just done a really good job of fooling hitters, changing up tempos, changing up rhythms. So I think he's just really good. Actually, I don't know if you've looked at any kind of futures odds. He's now one of the, I think he's like fourth in terms of best odds mm-hmm. when the AL Cy Young. I don't want to stack against him. To me, the only conversation is how much do we want to roster him at this salary?
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at the White Sox and I think of them as having a decent enough offense. And against lefties, they have a substantially good offense. 120 WRC plus, fourth best in baseball against lefties with a 153 ISO. I don't know. Obviously, no Eloy Jimenez is another bat that you wish you had there. He's been on the IL, it feels like, for 2 years now. Yoan Moncada got removed. I don't know if he'll be in the lineup. He has the day-to-day tag next to him. I doubt he's in the lineup today. So that ends up being Josh Harrison, more than likely, being the guy who's going to play third base. And that is a guy that I would like to see in the mix, or that I would like to not see in the mix with just a 14.9% K percentage this season. So it's hard because I feel like it's a decent enough offense against lefties. Obviously, Yankee Stadium is a fantastic ballpark, but he's been so good. And K percentage just, it lifts your floor so much in these kind of spots. And it comes down to an ownership game to a certain extent. We're pretty much going to see a pretty wide open pool for the first time in a long time. Nobody gaining over 30% rostership on DraftKings right now. If the slate started right now at 14%, I find it hard to believe that him and Lauer wouldn't be two of my highest owned pitchers at their current ownership.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy because if you told me before the season started, hey, we're going to have an 11-game slate and the only two pitchers priced over 10K are going to be Eric Lauer and Nestor Cortez, I would be like, well, there's no way I play them, not because I think they're bad pitchers, but just what is the reasonable strikeout upside in those guys at such an expensive salary? But I mean, to this point now, and I mean, Sean Manaea is also over 10K on DraftKings. Mm-hmm. That's going to be something else to talk about when it comes to DK. But yeah, I mean, Cortez, the matchup against the White Sox is I think, a difficult one. They have a 120 WRC plus against left-handed pitching. But Cortes has been so good this year against everybody that I'm going to have him in my player pool, not going to stack against him. Different situation. We talk about the Yankees offense versus Dallas Keuchel, though.
Yeah, I might have a couple percent of Tim Anderson, might have a couple percent of Luis Robert because they're my boys, but I still feel like I'm with you. No full stacks, no really wanting to go pick on him. Welcome to the new age, in the words of Imagine Dragons. Just a different pitcher in Nestor Cortes. Let's talk Yankees bats, because that's the far more pressing issue, as you said. Going up against Keuchel, Keuchel's very bad. Traditionally been a ground ball pitcher for his career. Still kind of his 3.2 degree launch angle we're looking at as being his average for the season, but he's giving up literally no hard contact either at the moment. And I see that progressing. 3.98 expected ERA, 12.5% K percentage. This is just a Yankee team that you're going to want to play a lot throughout the season. Do you have any concerns just against a ground ball pitcher that maybe the upside isn't there in the same way that the field might expect it to be?
I mean, that's how I used to feel about Dallas Keuchel, but he's so bad now that what does it even matter? He's given up home runs in half of his starts this year. He doesn't generate strikeouts. He's walking a lot of guys too. You know, there was a point in time where he had pinpoint control, and even if he allowed contact and some guys would get on base against him, it was so much ground balls and he hardly ever walked guys that he would induce a lot of double plays. But he is an 11.7% walk rate this year. And the highest of his career before this was actually last year, 8.2%. So, I mean, we're looking at somebody who is coming off the worst control year of his career. And now it's gotten 50% worse in terms of his walk rate. His strikeout rate is a career low 12.5%. These are just bad things. Career worst strikeout rate, career high walk rate. And then on top of that, a guy who just really gives up a lot of contact. And by the way, the ground ball rate is down this year as well. Not crazy, but 58% for his career. It's at 55.7% this year. The velocity is down to 88.2 miles per hour. So a guy who never threw hard is also throwing the softest of his career. There's so many red flags that Dallas Keuchel is just totally finished that, I mean, I'm looking to stack the Yankees offense against. And there's so much powerful right-handed bats. And I would be pretty surprised if they don't get to Dallas Keuchel in this one.
Yeah, you've got expensive Judge, expensive Stanton. Going to be tough to make them work with the Lauer or Cortes type lineups on DraftKings.com. But you get some salary savings and Hicks expected to be in that lineup down there. Sub 3K, 2,800 on DraftKings. Josh Donaldson, DJ LeMahieu, both mid fours. I think it's still a pretty stackable team for this slate. No surprises. The Yankees are interesting on any slate against any pitcher, pretty much any single time. Because if they're up against a good pitcher, they'll be low owned. Here, not a good pitcher, but there's more games on the slate, so there's always a reason to go to the Yankees. Anything else in this one for you?
Nope. Yankees are high priority stack. As of right now, the three teams with the highest top stack odds, it is the Mets, who I don't think that game happens, the Dodgers, who we just talked about, and then the Yankees. So Dodgers and Yankees, both fairly high priorities for me.
All right, my friends. Well, a priority for me is for all of you to check out Awesomo Plus tools and content. Getting that Awesomo Plus Platinum if you can, because right now we're going to help you with that. MLB Strategy Show, all caps, one word. MLB Strategy Show will get you 50% off your first month of Awesomo Plus Platinum. Take advantage of that, because right now we are still in a really prime DFS spot. Obviously, the PGA Championship was this weekend. Hopefully, everybody did their nice AM, PM stacks and is sitting very, very nicely in that one. Going to be a fun afternoon of golf watching. You have an opportunity to play the NHL streets. The playoffs have been really exciting. Lots of game sevens in the last round, in the second round so far. Really exciting, high-scoring games, fun DFS matchups. We have MLB content constantly. Of course, the top stacks tool, top pitchers tool, everything you want there. And last but not least, the NBA streets, Eastern Conference, Western Conference finals, tons of projections, tons of opportunities with massive prize pools there, 150K up to first in a number of those spots. Take advantage of everything we have behind the paywall right now for 50% off your first month using that MLB Strategy Show promo code. That's not going to be here forever, so take advantage. MLB Strategy Show, stop guessing, start winning, and join Osmo Plus today. Greg, I was going to try to hit you up. Are we trying to get out of here at 15 or at zeros?
At zero if possible. If not, okay. Whatever.
Okay. I mean, it might be five over. I'm just trying to allot time to know how much time we have to talk about certain things. Eric is going to be on his best behavior. Lucky all of you. Cincinnati Reds, 3.5 implied runs going up against the Blue Jays, 4.5. One of my favorite pitchers back in the day, Luis Castillo on the mound, but this is just a brutal, brutal spot to be looking at in Toronto. so far this season, not very successful in his few outings, 4.61 expected ERA, down to a 17.9% K percentage for a career, 26.1% for Luis Castillo. He's only 29, so I don't think he's quite over the hill, but if that fastball is not zinging along, he's got really no offering that I feel. That changeup really is just based on how well that fastball is going, and I don't feel good about Castillo here. I would love to roster him just for nostalgia, but probably won't. What are you planning to do with him?
Yeah, I think the Blue Jays are a good stack to get to. There's not that much opportunity cost in terms of paying up for pitchers, so if we have the ability to spend up for like a Nestor Cortez and an Eric Lauer, cool, I'm going to do it. I don't think I need to jam 10K plus Nestor Cortez and Eric Lauer. So I'm more apt to save money at pitching today and just kind of hope it goes for the best and pay up for some of these expensive offenses. The Blue Jays are one of them. I think ultimately because of the name value on Luis Castillo, we're not going to see that much ownership go to Toronto. But there's concerns here. And, you know, how much could we read into him? So he's only pitched 9 innings this year, made 2 starts, but he started the year hurt, so he started the year getting ready in the minor leagues to pitch in the big leagues. Then he gets called up. The results haven't been there in limited sample size. 5.59 ERA is giving up a lot of hard contact. The strikeout rate hasn't been there, which is a concern, only 17.9%. He's walking a lot of guys, 10.3%. But then the other thing, too, that you mentioned is with the velocity. His velocity was 97.3 as his average fastball velocity last year. It's at 95.4. So when you couple the fastball being down 2 miles per hour with the layoff and with him starting the year hurt, it's just reasonable to question how healthy he is. Something else to remember also, he was miserable at the start of last year. I'm going to pull up the splits, but do you remember this being a thing last year?
Absolutely. Really, so does Sean V in the chat. So nice, yeah, for Sean V to remind everybody, the people who do not know, Luis Castillo confirmed slow starter. I am not disagreeing with the Sean V take, which is not great.
So here was his FIP by month last year, March, April, 5.39, and then it was 4.31 in May. And then he just steadily got better as the year went on. Ultimately, he finished the year with a 4 FIP in the first half of the season, 3.45 in the second half of the year. But also keep in mind that the first month where he was really bad, he's been hurt to this point. We haven't seen him at this point. So, I mean, I would think his May, June is going to be really poor this year. And then maybe we start seeing him pick it up in the second half of the year, but I think this is a good time to pick on Luis Castillo, particularly with a really potent Blue Jays offense.
I'm with you. I feel bad about it. I don't feel good about it because I love my boy Luis Castillo, but I can't do it today. I will not be pulling the trigger on that one against the Blue Jays. Problematic. Also name recognition, Hyunjin Ryu of Dodgers days still has the Dodgers photo on DraftKings, which, again, do they ever revamp these? It's just strange to me. It's been 2 years, but here we are. Hyunjin Ryu, 8,300 on TK. I find no way that I'm going to get to him either in this spot. Once upon a time was really just limiting a lot of the hard contact. It's really going away. 45.2% hard hit percentage. Last season, it was pretty bad too. 41.6% hard hit percentage. He's got a 4.67 expected ERA, a lot better than his 9 actual ERA, but this is just not a good pitcher anymore. He's 35, and I think he's just losing it. We're going to be stacking up against him, right?
No, it's the Reds offense. So to me, it's just, I don't really want to play either side. Ryu's also a little bit overpriced at $8,300 over on DraftKings. FanDuel at $6,400. You know, if you want to stack up two expensive offenses and need salary savings at pitcher, I think Ryu at $6,400 has a little bit of a ceiling, but no, I don't really want to stack the Reds against Ryu. I know that he hasn't been good this year, but he's also only pitched 12 innings. And I think there's a pretty good chance that he picks it back up, particularly when you consider that the velocity is up this year. So it's different from Luis Castillo, where Luis Castillo is struggling in a small sample size and his velocity is way down. We actually see with Ryu, his velocity is up about a mile per hour over where it was the last couple of years. So when he pitched really well in Dodgers days and was actually up for Cy Young consideration, he's not that guy anymore. But I tend to think Ryu is going to be okay going forward. Projection sites still have him looking okay. Zips has him with 3.88 ERA the rest of the season, Steamer 3.86. So a little bit of consideration on FanDuel just because he's only 6,400. Not for me on DK 8,300, but I don't really want to stack against him with a shitty Reds offense either.
Yeah, it's sad too, because against lefties, 26.5% K percentage, fourth worst in baseball, and dead last in WRC plus 65. 65 WRC plus for the Reds against lefties. They are not good. But in the words of Puddle of Mud, everything's so dreary and everything's and everyone's so vague. So I'm going to have a little Brandon Drury, a little Tommy Pham in my life. Those are things I can get behind. Mike Lawrence kind of liked that one. Yeah, that was a cut. He understood there. I'm glad to see a little smile. Mike Lawrence, awesome, you know, behind the virtual glass today, doing a great job. NBA strategy show, MLB strategy show. He's running it all here. Appreciate you, my guy. But let's talk the Toronto Blue Jays offense then, because I think that's the more pressing issue for both of us, even though I will have a couple of Reds on the other side on Ryu, just in cases. Who do you want to get to the most that isn't named Vlad Guerrero Jr. or George Springer from Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, I think that just in terms of five-man stacks, particularly on a slate of this size, I'm going to generally just prioritize whoever ends up hitting towards the top of the order. Like, there isn't generally going to be that much of a need to go deep into the lineup when it's a slate with, you know, 12, 11 games more realistically. So I think anybody in the Blue Jays lineup is going to be realistic. I'm just pulling up the ownerships for some of the individual hitters right now. Let's see.
You're going to lose Lourdes Gurriel out of the five spot. You're probably going to have the double catcher situation. More than likely it's going to be a Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk situation on DK, which always sucks because they're both expensive, 4,300 and 4,600. And they're both like just okay at this point in time. I mean, Danny Jansen, far more of a priority for me over Alejandro Kirk. But it seems like sometimes Kirk's been batting fifth in that lineup. It's a wonky situation. Obviously, I don't want to get crazy with catchers on a FanDuel type site, but on DK, it's just frustrating, especially Gurriel got removed Wednesday, didn't play Thursday. Obviously, I don't think Toronto played in general on Thursday, but we'll see if he's in that lineup. It would be nice to have him batting fifth and have access to that, but otherwise it's going to be Tapia probably batting ninth, and then you're in some issues because that catcher, double catcher situation just is the worst.
Yeah, and also just looking at the projected ownership here, I think everybody's under-owned. The most popular hitter is Vlad Jr., and that's at 3% ownership. Everybody else is sub 3%, and the majority of these hitters are under 1%. Even the only guys that are over 1% outside of Vlad are Springer and Bichette. So realistically, I could get overweight to everybody here. Matt Chapman, I guess if I had to go a little bit deeper into the lineup, he's not particularly expensive. I know he hasn't had the best start to the season in Toronto, but still, I think he's an established hitter. There's power upside there. He's relatively cheap, so I don't mind getting to him. If Gurriel's in the lineup, I do think he's probably the best value play there.
Aaron D., thanks for the song playing in my head. You are so welcome. I could have sung, "She effing hates me." That's probably the other Puddle of Mud song I actually know off the top of my head. I don't know.
I feel like you know a lot of songs off the top of your head.
I do know a couple, more than one. More than one. Invite me to bar trivia sometime, Greg. I'll fly out to New Jersey for it. We will win the song category, probably, maybe not. Detroit Tigers, 4.3 implied runs. Cleveland Indians, 4.2. Our boy, he has grown up. Tarik Skubal, having the best season of his career as a real-life pitcher. From a strikeout perspective, he's just continuing to be phenomenal. I don't really know what to say other than it was really frustrating to see him at 6K on DraftKings.com on that slate where I knew he'd be the most popular pitcher. And I went under the field, and I am just ruining the day. But now he's 9,500, and now he's 5%. This is the guy that I want to play in egregious amount today. Are you with me in chasing those Tarik Skubal dollars?
Yeah, he's been great. I think if you look at the numbers today, just on all the pitchers overall, I think there's a case to be made that Skubal's been the second best pitcher on this slate for the season behind Nestor Cortez. I mean, the numbers are just really solid for him. 28.3% K rate, 2.37 expected ERA. I don't hate the matchup against the Cleveland Guardians. So, I mean, I think that Skubal is a really solid option. I don't even hate the price tag just because we've talked about it before. When he has his good starts, the ceiling is so high because he gets his outs via strikeouts. He's never been a guy that gets outs via other ways. When he allows contact, it's generally pretty hard. So, if Skubal is on and he's generating outs, a lot of them are going to be strikeouts. So I think he is one of the top options on the slate from a pitching standpoint. I would think that even independent of ownership. And now we get the added bonus that he's not going to be popular. You mentioned that he's only projected for 5% ownership over on DraftKings and on FanDuel, where Skubal is 9,500. He's projected for 2% ownership. I think those are very reasonable numbers to get overweight to the field on 5% DK, 2% FanDuel. I'll be over that.
Yeah, for sure. 100 ISO for Cleveland against lefties. So 82 WRC plus, not exactly the best offense there. The K percentage for Cleveland is always what you're concerned about because they're down, you know, in the low 20s a lot of the time. Well, 21.1% against lefties is actually a little better than I was expecting to see. That's still top 10 in baseball, but I'm definitely going to be firing up some screwball at that ownership, no doubt about it. On the other side of this one, and yes, it's Cleveland Guardians. That's the first time I've done that this entire season. I knew it would happen eventually, but hey, I made it to May 20th without mixing the two up. So there you go. Aaron Civale going up for Cleveland. I have zero interest. How about you?
So here's the positive when it comes to Civale. He is generating strikeouts this year, 22.3% K rate. He's generating a lot of hard contact against them. So 5.58 expected ERA, 1.74 whip. Let's see. Civale's
just so popular.
Yes, he is going to be. Well, but the reason he's popular is warranted. He's $5,800 on DraftKings. That is an awful price tag.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to not consider him at $5,800. FanDuel at $6,800. I think that's also in play, single pitcher site. But on DraftKings, I just don't know how I don't consider Civale in play in a positive matchup when he's only $5,800 with some strikeout upside in a positive matchup against the Tigers.
You know how you get away from it, Greg, is you pop open a seltzer and you roster Smeltzer.
Is that what we're going to do? Is that what we're going to do? You can play Smeltzer also, but I just find it hard to just totally X out Civale. I don't care as much about, and it's not like he's crazy popular. 22% ownership, I think, is fine when we also have him with a 22% chance to be the top value pitcher on the slate. The high-end pitchers, I'm not dying to roster a lot of them, and there's expensive offenses I want to play. So I think Civale is, for me, a reasonable way to save salary on DK.
Yeah. The 4.3 implied runs here. I'm going to take some shots on the Tigers. Yeah. Do I really want to go overboard with one of the worst offenses? Not really, but 5.3% top stack potential, 1 in 20 basically. And they're going a little bit overvalued as well. So Savali's overowned, Detroit Tigers are overowned. I'm not going to be getting carried away, but anything stick out to you from the Detroit side specifically?
Not really. The only thing I'll say is this. If we are going to see Civale become really popular, which you mentioned that right now he is projected for some ownership, I think we could take stabs at Detroit as a leverage stack. Although with that said, Detroit is fairly popular right now on DraftKings also. This is a weird spot. Who would have thought that would be Aaron Civale versus the Tigers offense and both spots would be popular, but as of right now, the Tigers are one of the most popular offenses on the slate. Civale is one of the most popular pitchers, but I do think there's reason for both of them. So if Civale is going to be in the neighborhood of, you know, mid 20% ownership, I'm cool with the Tigers for some leverage purposes.
And on the other side, yes, I love our guy Skuball, but he's not popular enough for me to want to get carried away with anything from Cleveland. If you wanted to roster Jose Ramirez and his 263 ISO, can I blame you? No, I cannot. Third base, just fine with it. Hasn't been as hot as what he was at the beginning of the season, but hot streaks are not a thing. Don't at me. Franmil Reyes, I'm okay. 3,200. That's really cheap, but he's garnering almost 10% ownership at 8.7% on DK. I don't have a lot here from Cleveland. Anything you have?
No, and they're also projected to be overowned right now. They are picking up about 5% ownership with a 2% chance to be a top stack. Considering how good I think Skuball is, and you do as well, my preference is to play contrarian Skuball than play a somewhat popular Cleveland offense.
Now to a very fun spot on this slate, and it has to do with the Seattle Mariners 4.5 implied runs alongside the Red Sox 4.5. I believe this game is basically a pick 'em if you look around all the books everywhere, and which is strange to say when you have Michael Wacha on one side, who's just been a really good real life pitcher. I don't have a ton of DFS interest, but then Robbie Ray on the other, a lefty, going up against a Boston Red Sox team that, to say Trevor Story came alive yesterday would be a little bit disingenuous to his triple dong game that he put up. Absolute breaking of slates, breaker of chains, if you will. Shout out Game of Thrones. But how do you feel about Robbie Ray on this slate? A guy that I don't know if you and I believe he would ever have or repeat what he did last season, but still think he's got the K stuff. And maybe there's some steam up that you get on the likes of Trevor Story in this Red Sox offense based off of yesterday.
Yeah, so really, really slow start to the season for Robbie Ray, and the strikeouts were way down. They've come back, though. In his last four starts, he struck out 8-5. That was not a great outing, but then 10-9 hitters. And by the way, the last two starts were against the Mets and the Phillies offenses. So fairly difficult matchups. Robbie Ray had strikeout success there. The fastball velocity has also started to tick back up in the start against the Phillies. His average velocity was at 94.4 miles per hour. So it looks like Robbie Ray is getting back on track. Maybe we could chalk up the slow start to a lack of spring training. And now with him getting back on board, he's not going to repeat what he did last year. But I do think he's going to be better going forward than he was to open the season. Also, somebody who has a fairly reasonable price tag with strikeout upside. So if I'm looking to save some salary at pitcher, Robbie Ray at 8,000 against what's kind of been an underwhelming Boston offense this year on DK, I think that is worthwhile. And then over on FanDuel at 9,100, I also think he's a little bit underpriced and he's not super popular either. He only projected for 11% ownership. So Robbie Ray, I think, is one of the pitchers to target today.
Yeah, this is the most interested I think I've been on for him. We'll see how ownership changes throughout the day. We still have almost 8 hours to lock, 7 hours, 20 minutes to lock. Plenty of time to be able to see how things transpire and where ownership starts to go, who gets steamed up. And if Robbie Ray isn't going to be popular against Boston, I am just fine firing it up. As long as we don't get one of those wind games. Wind is blowing out in Fenway. Says it's only 10 miles per hour right now, Greg. So none of that 25 mile an hour stuff we saw from that Houston game that was like pinball. It was something.
Every ball that was hit remotely well, it didn't even have to hit remotely well. If you just made contact with it and went in the air, you hit a home run in that game. Robbie Ray has been homer prone at times. So I think I'll make some stacks of Boston for today, particularly with some of the right-handed power bats. But my preference here is to roster Robbie Ray.
T-Strack, Eric, I enjoy how much energy you bring to these shows. Thank you for that. My guy, thank you for the compliment. I try my best. I like talking sports. It's fun. And hanging out with Greg is okay. So those are things that I'm all right with. Go ahead.
I very much like doing shows with Eric Lindquist.
I like doing them with Greg Ehrenberg.
So I'm not even going to make a joke. I like Eric.
Oh, now I'm starting to get that compliment problem that you have. Yeah. It's like,
I like water bottle. I like lamp.
Michael Wacha on the other side, 368 expected slugging, 19% K percentage ain't great. Neither is an 11% walk rate here on the season, but not really a ton of interest going his direction. But I do see the 4.5 implied runs on the other side. Good hitting weather, wind blowing out. Is Seattle a team you might be looking at stacking up against Wacha?
No, they're one of the most negatively leveraged teams on the entire slate, more so on DK than FanDuel. On DraftKings, we have them with 8% projected ownership with a 4.7% chance to be a top stack. They're a little more expensive on FanDuel, which reduces their ownership, but they still are going over-owned. And once again, it's not a bad spot against Michael Wacha. I don't think the Mariners' offense is all that great. I think they're a little bit overrated. Julio Rodriguez has shown a lot of stolen base and speed upside. But if we're going to see the Mariners pick up some sort of ownership here, like Wacha has been solid this year, 19% K rate, 3.14 expected ERA, whip under one. So I don't really want to get behind the Mariners in this spot when it's actually a team that the field is getting to.
I just went on Twitter for like 2 seconds and it was just John Daly at a casino after shooting two over at the PGA Championship yesterday. And I can't stop laughing. It's the greatest thing.
Just a SIG in hand and a DC.
And a DC, baby. Him just swinging that McDonald's DC and just swinging it around, dropping it, hitting it to like 2 feet, making birdie on the first hole yesterday was the thing legends are made of.
Come he's allowed to use a cart? Which, by the way, I don't know if you noticed. Did you see the number on the side of the cart?
I did, because he tapes it on. It's not actually the number 69 cart. He takes that sticker and he puts it on the side.
How come he's allowed to ride a cart, but Tiger Woods, who has one functional leg, is not allowed to use a cart?
Because he has cancer.
But Tiger Woods was in a car accident.
It has to do, you have to go through the medical clearance to be able to get it done. You have to do a lot of different things to be able to get it. But he had cancer and he had some kind of another condition that got him leverage for it. This goes back to Casey Martin, who was actually a college teammate of Tiger Woods. They were teammates at Stanford. And Casey Martin put in a thing with the PGA Tour in order to be able to take a cart because of a condition he had with his leg. He ended up winning a lawsuit. And then some other people, it has to be like very extreme circumstances for it to happen. But John Daly is one of them.
Well, I think the doctors told Tiger Woods he had like a 60% chance of his leg being amputated. I don't know. It seems extreme to me. I'd say let Tiger ride in the 69-69 cart.
Mike Lawrence found it. Look at this. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. DC SIGs on the left side. Look at that. Just in the bottom left corner with John Daly, Santa Claus himself, just playing the slots, playing the hits over there. God, is that beautiful. Look at that, man. That's peak. Glory. That's the peak athletic form, folks.
Have you ever seen the story about him where he once lost 1.6 million dollars gambling in one day?
Oh yeah, I read that book. It was incredible. It's what 1.6 million. He's lost over like $15 million, I think, gambling in his career. I bet it's more than that when you think about it.
Maybe. Who's to say? I don't know.
Phil Mickelson sounds like he's in a ripe spot because of it too. So John Daly, Phil Mickelson, who'd have thought? Common ground right there. They might need to get that checked, but here we are. Thank you for pulling that up, Mike. It just, I saw it and it made me laugh and I liked it. So shared it with you all. Yeah, we aren't going to roster Seattle. Are we going to be rostering some Boston bats with the potency of them going up against one Robbie Ray?
Low priority, but yeah, I'll roster some of the right-handed power bats here just because Robbie Wright is somebody who historically, when he struggles, he gives up home runs.
All right. We'll be able to save some time because I'm literally taking this Rockies-Mets game off the board. 100% precipitation right now in Colorado. There's no way they're playing that game. So here we go to lead off the sheet. Mike, if you want to take that off the sidebar, that one can go. That would be the Mets and Colorado in Colorado. But Texas Rangers, Michael Perez on the mound here for them, going up against the Astros. Christian Javier, one of my favorite names ever, but 29.1% K percentage. Might be a pitcher to roster today. Nice little K percentage we're looking at so far this season. Michael Perez, no. Christian Javier, maybe. What do you stand with pitching here?
You mean Martin Perez, right?
Martin Perez. What did I type Michael?
Dude, I was so confused. You're talking about Michael Perez. I'm like, is there a pitcher fine. That I'm not aware
No, Michael Perez, he's a catcher, right, for Pittsburgh. My brain was not working.
But I'm sure there's a lot of Michael Perez's. It's a fairly common name.
Don't mind me. Martin Perez, I just don't like him that much, even though former Twins great for his one season. Martin Perez.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about this Michael Perez, but this Martin Perez is having a little bit of a breakout season. And, you know, Perez in the past has generally not been a good pitcher, but also hasn't really been somebody you want to stack against because the ground ball rate has been high in the past. And he's been a guy who kind of could go out there and pitch, you know, six innings, he got three runs pretty consistently where he was never good, but wasn't ever getting blown up. He's been really good so far this year. He's not going to maintain a 0% home run to fly ball rate, but a 2.01 ERA, 2.5 expected ERA. There's a lot of high-end offenses I like on this slate. I can't roster all of them. And I don't think I'm going to really want to get to Houston against Martin Perez when I could roster the Yankees against Dallas Keuchel for the same ownership. I could roster the Dodgers against Ranger Suarez for less ownership. So those are going to be higher priorities for me than getting to the Houston offense. I don't want to roster Perez by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, you don't even know what his name is. Like, how much could we roster a guy who we don't know his name?
He's going to win me a GPP tonight. That's going to happen.
Yeah, that would be. If you win a GPP with a pitcher whose name you say incorrectly, so be it. But yeah, I don't really want to roster Martin Perez, the Astros. I just think there's better high-end offenses to pay up for.
That is agreed for. On the other side, Christian Javier, do we expect that he can continue this strikeout stuff? Because if he does, there has to be some interest you have going up against this Texas offense anytime somebody can get up there and miss bats. Plus, even though the hard hit percentage is down north of 40%, only a 206 expecting batting average. If he can limit the walks, I feel like Christian Javier is a guy to roster today. How do you feel about him?
Yeah, for sure. I've been playing him as a contrarian option a good amount lately, and he's way underpriced on FanDuel. So he is picking up some ownership on FanDuel as a single pitcher site, but 7,800 for him at home against the Texas Rangers. That's a misprice, in my opinion, considering how successful he's been this year. And then over on DK as well, the pitching options aren't going to blow us away on the high end, but we're getting Javier 23% ownership at 8,800 against the Texas Rangers. I could certainly get behind that because Javier has been really impressively good this year. 3.2 ERA, 3.35 expected ERA. His strikeout rate this year is at 29.1%. Last year was 30.7%. Zips hasn't projected with a 31.1% K rate going forward. Now with Jake Odorizzi hurt, I think that Christian Javier is going to be sticking in the rotation long-term. Yeah, I think he's too cheap on both sides. I like him.
All right, we go to the Minnesota Twins, 4.1 implied runs at Kansas City Royals, 3.9. Because, yeah, Houston, we can play against Martin Perez. You can play him against anybody when you want to play Houston, right?
Yeah, so
In terms of Houston, you talked about it. Yeah, you said limited interest.
It's not an outright fade for me, but I'd rather pay up for the Dodgers or the Yankees, who have higher top stack odds and then are also teams that are projected for less ownership right now.
All right, we head over to the Minnesota Twins. As I was saying, 4.1 implied runs for them going up against the Royals, 3.9. And neither of these pitchers are quote-unquote good. But Smeltzer, we're just getting a glimpse of him. He's also stretched out, and he's also $5,100 on DraftKings.com going up against, again, one start from Smeltzer, a lefty going up against this team. Yeah, it's a little less appealing. You get guys up and down this lineup with Merrifield and you pronounce splits now at this point in time. You have other guys like Hunter Dozier noted in the lineup, somebody who's going to be decent up against lefties. But we're talking 5,100 against the Royals with a sub four implied total. That immediately puts him into consideration for me. How do you feel about Smeltzer on this slate today?
He's produced. I mean, I can't even say he's produced good results. He's pitched five total innings. Last year, he pitched four innings. Overall, what we've seen from Smeltzer, here's the issue. No strikeout upside. We've seen 74 big league innings, some out of the bullpen, some as a starter, and he's produced an 18.7% strikeout rate. This year, 10.5% K rate in his one start. Last year, 17.6%. I understand that he's not going to be all that expensive today. He's not going to be popular, but I just don't think there's a lot of upside in rostering Devin Smeltzer.
Yeah, you're rostering him just to get bats. Like, you're rostering him to get a lot of bats, and he doesn't throw it over 90. And this day and age, pretty unbelievable to see a pitcher do anything at the big league level not throwing it over 90. So the only reason that I have any consideration there is that he's unowned and he is cheap. So good times. We will move on to the other side of this one. And Daniel Lynch, not a guy that I ever really rostered. 3.97 expected ERA, 22.5% K percentage. Twins over a four implied total there in KC. I can't do it. Can you?
Yeah. So you can't do it in terms of rostering Lynch.
Yeah. Can't do it.
Yeah. So Lynch was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball going into last year, but at a certain point you have to deliver results at the big league level. Like Casey Mize, for instance, he has horrific underlying stats. It's hard for me to really say like, oh, cool, he's a high end prospect that's well regarded. You know, overall from Lynch, the numbers have been slightly better this year, but even so, we've seen him make 21 big league starts. He's a 4.96 ERA, 4.69 FIP. I don't have any interest in rostering them. On the other side with the Twins, it is a good spot for them, but they are really popular. Projected for 9.5% ownership with 5.7% top stack odds over on DraftKings. On FanDuel, 7.4% ownership with 5.5% top stack odds. It's a good spot against Daniel Lynch, just too popular. I'd rather get to lower owned offenses.
I'm with you. Yeah, Tyler Mullen, he was great yesterday. Those were good times. I enjoyed that as well. Shout out to us for recommending such things. But we go to the Minnesota Twins offense. Give me Buxton. Give me Correa. Good to see everybody back in the mix here for this baseball team against Lynch. This Twins team against lefties, it's going to be good going forward. I'm giddy. Are you going to be rostering my Minnesota Twins today?
No, they're too popular. They're one of the most negatively leveraged stacks on DraftKings right now. And if that's the case on an 11-game slate, I'll just look elsewhere. I don't really want to roster a team that has nearly 10% ownership with a 5% chance to be a top stack.
It sucks they're popular on every single slate. I'll still have a little bit here and there. There's no way I want to have Buxton as a one-off to some degree. But even that, 16.2%, that's a pretty popular one-off when you're talking about a 11-game slate, because we're just going to assume Colorado isn't going to exist. Kansas City against Smeltzer. Won't miss bats. Still any Kansas City interest?
Not really. In terms of KC, they have one of the lowest top stack odds in the entire slate. They're only projected with a 2.4% chance to be the top scoring team on DraftKings, 2.6 on FanDuel. They're really low owned. If you're playing 150 lineups and you have a couple of shares here, it's not a hard team to get overweight to the field on. But if you're somebody who plays 1, 3, 20 lineups, they wouldn't be in the player pool.
Well, I was hoping Eric Traub was going to be in chat, or Eric McPherson was going to be in chat, EMAC himself, for the next game, because it is Team Eric. Hashtag Team Eric is in full effect. Washington Nationals, 3.3 going up against the Brewers, 4.7 implied runs. Eric Fetty, and Eric Lauer, who we talked about earlier, highest K percentage on the mound, because that makes sense. How did such things happen? We will never know. But Eric Fetty, let's start with him against Milwaukee. We can't go this direction, can we?
Does it upset you when somebody's name is Eric and they spell it differently than you?
Yeah, well, CK is absurd.
I mean, that's the same. Like, I think G-R-E-G-G is a ridiculous way to spell Greg. His name Greg, or is it Greg? Like, it's Eric. it's the wrong way to spell Eric.
Yeah, Eric. That's how it rhymes with F-U-C-K. Like, the C-K makes no damn sense to me. And also, I always tell people, they're like, oh, is it C or K? And I'm like, C for correct.
Yeah, exactly. Good. That's a good way to look at it. And yeah, so Eric Fetty spells his name incorrectly. One of the many reasons we shouldn't roster him today.
Correct.
That and the Brewers on the other side, pretty lofty implied run total at 4.7. And, you know, Fetty's just never delivered great results in the big leagues. He's been slightly better this year, but that still only means a 4.51 expected ERA. And the Brewers have been one of the teams with the most power of any offense in baseball this year. So they're at home. It's a hitter-friendly park. They're not expected to be all that popular. 3.7% projected ownership over on DraftKings, 3.6% on FanDuel. So once again, we're comparing them to a team like the Minnesota Twins, who we just talked about. They have identical top stack odds, nearly identical top stack odds to the Minnesota Twins, but they have a third of the ownership. That's a lot more appealing to me.
You guys are too funny in chat. I can't. It's too good. But Eric Lauer, we can roster, yes.
Eric, so yes and no. because the results for Eric Lauer this year are really, really good. 35.5% K rate, 3.23 expected ERA. The whip is under one. Here's the one question I have with Eric Lauer, though. I have a lot of interest in expensive offenses on this slate. And I don't know that I'm going to end up prioritizing a 10,400 Eric Lauer over on DraftKings or 10,400. Oh, it was the same price on both, like 10,400 on FanDuel or DraftKings. If you're rostering a cheap offense and you can pay up for them, that's not problematic. But I'm more inclined to get to like Christian Javier and Tyreek Skubal for cheaper.
I was going to say, there's some stuff over at PrizePicks I'll talk about here in a second, because they've added these trio of home run packages where they basically take the three most potent batters and you can take over under 0.5 home runs. And I'm going to do some digging into that today because it's a really fun type of game element. I think I might short the likes of Soto, Nelson Cruz, who you were an early adopter of. Nelson Cruz might be broken. I didn't want to believe it. He's hit four homers now in the season, 182 average, but Soto, Cruz, and Bell, you can short them and take the under of 0.5 home runs today. That seems like fun against Eric Lauer.
I'd have to look at the home run odds. Like I would like to agree with you, but I just don't know off the top of my head.
I don't know either, but I at first glance, when I saw that those were the offerings today, I thought it made a lot of sense to look at that. Look at that. Mike Lawrence pulling it up here. This is a good segue into PrizePicks because I don't think we're really going to be talking about any other pieces of this game, but prizepicks.com is such a fun site to be signing up for. 2, 3, 4, or 5 player props you can do across multiple sports. And now they have amazing game types. I've never seen this game type at a sports book. So if you're in California like me, if you're in a spot where we don't have legalized betting, you have an opportunity to go to PrizePicks and play across the PGA Championship, MLB. You have so many different things that you have an opportunity. You have one for John Daly. Will John Daly make one birdie today? You have an opportunity to play the over or the under of that. That is a fascinating thing to talk through. I'm excited to look at some of the more offerings for that as I go on this afternoon, because it's just such a great site to play on. Plus, use promo code AUSIMO, $100 first match deposit bonus, as well as one free month of AUSIMO Plus Platinum just by signing up and using the link below. Look at that, disc golf, they have everything you could possibly want. So if there's a niche sport that you are aware of, that you have information for, or that you get here at AUSIMO in-house through that free month of AUSIMO Plus Platinum, you have an opportunity to make money at PrizePicks. So stop guessing, start winning. Join us at AUSIMO, but do it through this amazing, amazing offer with our partner PrizePicks, the sponsor of the MLB Strategy Show. Thank you so much to them for their sponsorship of this and so many other shows here at our YouTube channel, our little corner of the woods. All right, my friend, the next game on the slate, we got three to go. We'll fly, two to go. Look at that. Oakland Athletics, 3.2 implied total at Los Angeles Angels, 4.3 for the other side of this one. Paul Blackburn, Chase Silseth. I don't know why I put C-H-A-W-E.
Aww.
Man, I couldn't spell today. What in the world, Eric? Chase Silseth on the other side, who performed very admirably here in the early going of his career. How do you feel about pitching in this spot?
Yeah, so let's start by talking about Silseth, who is only 22 years old, gets called up to the big leagues, was not a heralded prospect prior to this year, but he's really young. He apparently has really good stuff because his average fastball velocity in his first start was 96.2 miles per hour. And his minor league numbers this year in five starts, he had a 1.73 ERA, 2.77 FIP, a 37.4% K rate. Even though he doesn't have the prospect acumen, I have a feeling this guy might end up being pretty solid. And his salary is $6,400 over on FanDuel. On DK, he is $7,800 in a plus matchup against the Oakland A's. I think this is another guy that we could look to get to for salary savings. And another reason I don't feel like I have to force paying up for somebody like an Eric Lauer, for instance, we just talked about. So I do like Chase Silseth. There's almost no data on him, so I can't really point too much at anything to be like, oh, cool, look at this. It's just, you know, in the handful of starts he's made in the minor leagues this year, looked really good. And then he made his MLB debut and he was throwing really hard. So I think things look pretty good for him and I like him as a value option.
Yeah, threw really hard, 8 ground balls, 81 pitches right out of the gate against Oakland, 6 innings strong, just one hit given up. Everybody's going to look good against Oakland. I think round two could look a lot like round one. So Silseth going back to the well against the worst offense you could possibly imagine on planet Earth, or one of them at least. Hi, Cincinnati, looking at you. I'm just fine taking that shot. Paul Blackburn on the other side. I mean, he goes in this handful of guys where there's always going to be positive leverage because these guys are going to be completely unowned against the Angels. I don't think he has enough strikeout stuff to be viable. He's 8,600. There's like no way I'm probably going to land on him on DK or FanDuel, 8,600 for his number over there. He's 8,500 on DraftKings. But the Angels, are they going to be interesting enough for you going up against Blackburn?
I have no faith in Paul Blackburn. The 7 starts he's made this year are really good, but there's a long track record of him not being a very good pitcher. Last year, he had a 5.87 ERA, a 5.47 expected ERA for his career. He's a 4.87 ERA. So Paul Blackburn is 28 years old. His velocity is up a little bit, but it's only 92 miles per hour. So it's not enough for me to think like, okay, this guy has totally changed who he is as a pitcher. And the Angels offense has a lot of firepower in it. So it's not like this is a team that I'm going to be rostering in like 10, 12% of stacks, but I think like 5-6% of the Angels as a stack is warranted for this slate, because I do not think these numbers for Paul Blackburn are going to continue going forward. Zips hasn't projected with a 4.53 ERA. Like I said, also, he's 28 years old. He doesn't throw hard. He's never had good strikeout stuff. And the one thing that really stands out to me as an outlier, the 4% home run to fly ball rate when he was at 20.5% last year, 12.3% for his career. He's going to end up giving up more home runs. I think it probably starts today against the Angels. So no Blackburn for me and mild interest in stacking against him.
Yeah, and with all the catchers that they have out, you can go Wallach. He's probably going to be the guy. Or please don't be Austin Romine. Please, please don't be Austin Romine as the catcher today, but probably will be now that I said that. Looking at the rest of the slime, I mean, you could just stack them up 1 through 5 at will. Throw in some I don't want to play Romine, but I'm not going to play Velasquez on the back half. Ward, anything that you would really just be against stacking up from the Angel side?
Not really. It's a lot of high upside power bats, guys that are also capable of striking out, but the Angels are relatively healthy right now. That's probably not going to be the case a few months from now, but at least as things stand, I think the offense is really potent, and I think Paul Blackburn's a pitcher that could be hit.
All right, guys, last game of the night here. We're going to get this done in a nice tight hour. Smash that like button for Greg for his Lilo and Stitch shirt. As good as it gets. Always a good way to start your morning off here at the MLB Strategy Show at Osmo. So appreciate you guys. Smash that like button for everybody involved. Green checkmark Rendon. Yeah, Rendon. It would be nice if you could join the party. He is just... Dynasty teams are the worst. Sean Manaea on the mound here for San Diego going up against the Giants. Jake Junis here on the other side. You can call him Jacob Junis. You can call him Jake. I don't know. Jake from State Farm. Sean Manaea, though, I think he's the guy we want to talk about first. 28.7% K percentage, 1.12 whip here. Looking at the top pitcher's tool, you knew he was going to be popular. I didn't know he was going to be this negatively leveraged popular 10-2. You said you wanted to talk about him before. Is that a good thing or a bad thing on today's slate?
So with Sean Manaea, I think that the ballpark is really going to help him, but I don't like the matchup against the San Francisco Giants. Their team has been so good on offense, and he's so popular. Sean Manaea is projected for nearly 30% ownership on DraftKings. On FanDuel, he's projected for 25% ownership. There's no pitcher that has ownership that's even remotely close. He's too popular for me. He's also fairly expensive. The Giants have a really good offense. So as things stand right now, I think that there's some safety in rostering Manaea in cash games, but I don't have that much interest in tournaments. I don't want to stack against him either in a pitcher-friendly park in San Francisco, but I don't really think that Manaea warrants the ownership he's getting.
Yeah, I'm looking at a 168 ISO for the Giants up against lefties, 108 WRC+. They can stack up their lineup to just basically be all righties. Then they'll, of course, break your soul if you actually roster them, and they'll bring in Jacques. They'll bring in Wade Jr. They'll bring in all those guys eventually. But yeah, Austin Slater back in the mix there. Darren Ruff going to be a rough outing, hopefully, for Manaea, because I'm probably going to be underweight to that 28% number. I'll still have some. He's not fadeable for me on this kind of a slate where I still like the K stuff. And if you can't get up to Cortez or Lauer, I think landing on Manaea for 200 less than Lauer is just fine by me, but definitely more popular. So I'm with you in that regard. On the other side of this one, Jacob Junis really came out of the gate nicely. And I feel like the Giants have just really extracted the most out of some of their arms that they acquire. They obviously know that Jacob Junis has some of the potent pitches that he does. He has just a 1.74 ERA now, sub one whip. Looks like a decent enough pitcher at 7,700. And the Padres, still in this ballpark, I think, are targetable. Are you going to land on any Junis in this outing?
I'm good writing off both sides of this. So I think Junis is a really good fit for pitching games in San Francisco. Generates some strikeouts, gives up a lot of hard contact and a lot of fly balls, but this is kind of the park you want to be that pitcher. And it's a park that's hard to hit homers in. So I think the Giants went out and they found themselves a pitcher that's going to fit really well in their home park. As for the Padres, I think there's better offenses to target going up against Junis. Junis is okay, but it's also, like I said, a pitcher friendly park. He's going to allow fly balls, but this is a park that's home hard to hit the ball out of. So I think if the slate was smaller, we could maybe look at the Padres, or if Junis is more popular, but no real interest in San Diego and no interest in Junis for me either.
All right, guys, that is the MLB strategy show. It was quick. It was efficient. Look at us go. Great times were had by all. Good times, if you will. Sorry, Larry C. I know you wanted that from me. MLB Live Before Lock will be McCarthy and Terry hanging out in the chat. Go get all his fire takes. He wins everything on FanDuel these days. So 5:45 p.m. Eastern time. Tune in for that. NBA Deeper Dive, Lofty and Adam at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then Eric and Greg are back. That is me talking the third person about us at 8 p.m. Eastern time, leading you guys up to Lock Dallas, Golden State. Going to be a fun one. Greg, any final words for the people?
Nope. Just like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and we'll see you guys later.
Look at that. Oh, so well ordered. Thank you again to Mike Lawrence there. Awesome, yo. In the chat, in your hearts, in your minds, we'll get ourselves out of here. He's Greg. He's got an awesome shirt. I'm Eric. I'm still wearing a stupid polo. Let's go watch some golf. We'll see you guys.